I am not soothing you or making light of your misfortune. If fate can be overcome by tears, let us bring tears to bear upon it. Let every day be passed in mourning. Every night be spent in sorrow instead of sleep. Let your breast be torn by your own hands, your very face attacked by them, and every kind of cruelty be practiced by your grief, if it will profit you. But if the dead cannot be brought back to life, however much we may beat our breasts, if destiny remains fixed and immovable forever, not to be changed by any sorrow, however great, and death does not loose his hold on anything that he has once taken away, then let our futile grief be brought to an end. Let us then steer our own course, and no longer allow ourselves to be driven to leeward by the force of our misfortune. He is a sorry pilot who lets the waves wring his rudder from his grasp, who leaves the sails to fly loose, and abandons the ship to the storm. But he who boldly grasps the helm, and clings to it until the sea closes over him, deserves praise, even though he be shipwrecked. Never let the future disturb you. You will meet it if you have to, with the same weapons of reason which today arm you against the present. There are misfortunes which strike the sage, without incapacitating him, of course, such as physical pain, infirmity, the loss of friends or children, or the catastrophes of his country when it is devastated by war. I grant that he is sensitive to these things, for we do not impute to him the hardness of rock or of iron. There is no virtue in putting up with that which one does not feel. And they say that there is this difference between the mind of a foolish man and that of a wise man, that the foolish man thinks that such visions are in fact as dreadful and terrifying as they appear at the original impact of them on his mind, and by his assent he approves of such ideas as if they were rightly to be feared, and confirms them. But the wise man, after being affected for a short time, and slightly in his color and expression, does not assent, but retains the steadfastness and strength of the opinion which he has always had about visions of this kind, namely that they are in no wise to be feared, but excite terror by a false appearance and vain alarms. Don't you know life is like a military campaign? One must serve on watch, another in reconnaissance, another on the front line. So it is for us. Each person's life is a kind of battle, and a long and varied one too. You must keep watch like a soldier, and do everything commanded. You have been stationed in a key post, not some lowly place, and not for a short time, but for life. Seek not for events to happen as you wish, but wish events to happen as they do, and your life will go smoothly. The chief task in life is simply this: to identify and separate matters so that I can say clearly to myself which are externals not under my control, and which have to do with the choices I actually control. Where then do I look for good and evil? Not to uncontrollable externals, but within myself, to the choices that are my own. One ought to seek out virtue for its own sake, without being influenced by fear or hope, or by any external influence. Moreover, that in that does happiness consist. What is your art? To be good. And how is this accomplished well except by general principles, some about the nature of the universe, and others about the proper constitution of man. In our control is the most beautiful and important thing, the thing because of which even the God himself is happy, namely the proper use of our impressions. We must concern ourselves absolutely with the things that are under our control, and entrust the things not in our control to the universe. Men are disturbed not by things, but by the principles and notions which they form concerning things. It is the act of an ill-instructed man to blame others for his own bad condition. It is the act of one who has begun to be instructed to lay the blame on himself, and of one whose instruction is completed neither to blame another nor himself. One who knows not who he is, and to what end he was born, what kind of world is this, and with whom he is associated therein? One who cannot distinguish good and evil, beauty and foulness, truth and falsehood, will never follow reason in shaping his desires and impulses and repulsions, nor yet in assent, denial or suspension of judgment, but will in one word go about deaf and blind, thinking himself to be somewhat, when he is in truth of no account. Is there anything new in all this? Is not this ignorance the cause of all the mistakes and mischances of men since the human race began? We are all chained to fortune. The chain of one is made of gold and wide, while that of another is short and rusty. But what difference does it make? The same prison surrounds all of us. And even those who have bound others are bound themselves, unless perchance you think that a chain on the left side is lighter. Honors bind one man, wealth another. Nobility oppresses some, humility others. Some are held in subjection by an external power, while others obey the tyrant within. Banishments keep some in place, the priesthood others. All life is slavery. Therefore each one must accustom himself to his own condition, and complain about it as little as possible, and lay hold to whatever good is to be found near him. Nothing is so bitter that a calm mind cannot find comfort in it. Small tablets, because of the writer's skill, have often served for many purposes, and a clever arrangement has often made a very narrow piece of land habitable. Apply reason to difficulties. Harsh circumstances can be softened, narrow limits can be widened, and burdensome things can be made to press less severely on those who bear them cleverly. If you are distressed by anything external, the pain is not due to the thing itself, but to your estimate of it, and this you have the power to revoke at any moment. These reasonings are unconnected. I am richer than you, therefore I am better. I am more eloquent than you, therefore I am better. The connection is rather this. I am richer than you, therefore my property is greater than yours. I am more eloquent than you, therefore my style is better than yours. But you, after all, are neither property nor style. If you have given way to anger, be sure that over and above the evil involved therein, you have strengthened the habit and added fuel to the fire. If overcome by a temptation of the flesh, do not reckon it a single defeat, but that you have also strengthened your dissolute habits. Habits and faculties are necessarily affected by the corresponding acts. One who has had fever, even when it has left him, is not in the same condition of health as before, unless indeed his cure is complete. Something of the same sort is true also of diseases of the mind. Behind, there remains a legacy of traces and of blisters. And unless these are effectually erased, subsequent blows on the same spot will produce no longer mere blisters but sores. If you do not wish to be prone to anger, do not feed the habit. Give it nothing which may tend to its increase. At first, keep quiet and count the days when you were not angry. I used to be angry every day, then every other day, next every 2, next every 3 days. And if you succeed in passing 30 days, sacrifice to the gods in thanksgiving. At dawn, when you have trouble getting out of bed, tell yourself, I have to go to work, as a human being. What do I have to complain of, if I'm going to do what I was born for, the things I was brought into the world to do? Or is this what I was created for, to huddle under the blankets and stay warm? Until we have begun to go without them, we fail to realize how unnecessary many things are. We've been using them not because we needed them, but because we had them. If you seek tranquility, do less, or more accurately, do what's essential. What the logos of a social being requires, and in the requisite way, which brings a double satisfaction, to do less better. Because most of what we say and do is not essential. If you can eliminate it, you'll have more time and more tranquility. Ask yourself at every moment, is this necessary? Riches are a cause of evil. Not because of themselves they do any evil, but because they goad men on so that they are ready to do evil. In general, any method of discipline applied to the body which tends to modify its desires or repulsions are good for ascetic ends. But if done for display, they betray at once a man who keeps an eye on outward show, who has an ulterior purpose, and is looking for spectators to shout, "Oh, what a great man!" This is why Apollonius so well said, "If you are bent upon a little private discipline, wait till you are choking with heat one day, then take a mouthful of cold water and spit it out again, and tell no man." What is not good for the beehive cannot be good for the bees. A commitment to justice in your own acts, which means thought and action resulting in the common good, what you were born to do. Men do not care how nobly they live, but only how long. Although it is within the reach of every man to live nobly, but within no man's power to live long. He who is running a race ought to endeavor and strive to the utmost of his ability to come off victor, but it is utterly wrong for him to trip up his competitor or to push him aside. So in life it is not unfair for one to seek for himself what may accrue to his benefit, but it is not right to take it from another. For mankind, evil is injustice and cruelty and indifference to a neighbor's trouble, while virtue is brotherly love and goodness and justice and beneficence and concern for the welfare of your neighbor. The courageous in exile or at home is fearless in the face of all such threats. For that reason, they've the courage to say what they think, equally at home or in exile.